Thank you for joining us today. Today we will talk about Fulbright U.S. Scholar opportunities in TEFL and education. My name is Carlene Velez, and I am the Outreach and Recruitment Specialist at the Institute of International Education, and I am joined today by Caroline Ho, who was a Fulbright Scholar to Taiwan in 2012 and 2013. She is also a professor of TEFL at Lone Star College System. Can you say hello to everyone, Caroline?
Hello, everyone. Greetings from Houston.
Thank you again for joining us today. We're very excited to talk about the Fulbright program with you. First, for those of you who might not be familiar with the program, I would just like to talk a little bit about the mission and history of Fulbright. The Fulbright program is the U.S. government's flagship international and educational exchange program, and we have partnerships with over 160 countries around the world. We offer opportunities for faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, and other professionals to teach or study or conduct research abroad, with the ultimate goal of fostering mutual understanding between nations and advancing knowledge across communities and improving lives around the world. We have been around for nearly 75 years, and we are very excited to see this program continue for many more years. The Fulbright program strives to promote diversity and inclusion in all that we do. So not only do we do so by recruiting from a wide variety of institutions throughout the United States, but also by making sure that people, regardless of their race, color, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious disability, or gender identity, and any other protected category, are represented in our program. It is a mission of ours to make sure that the applicants in our program represent the diversity of U.S. society. Some of you might be wondering why Fulbright is a good option for you right now, and it comes down to a couple points. First, the fact that Fulbright is transformational. It really does allow you to foster relationships that are real and lasting with people of other nations. It also allows you to expand your network for publishing, build a multicultural network in your classroom, and basically serve as an ambassador for international exchange at your home institution. The Fulbright Network has a vibrant alumni network, and as such, if you become a Fulbright recipient, you are known as a Fulbright Scholar and can carry that with you throughout your entire career. The next thing that is really special about Fulbright is that it's family friendly. About 60% of our awards include some type of dependent support. And again, that differs by award, but many of the awards do support scholars going abroad with families. And in fact, many of the dependents of Fulbrighters go on to have international careers. And finally, Fulbright is supportive. Alumni are always willing to share their experiences, like Carolyn today, who is on our call with us, and we have domestic and in-country staff to provide assistance as well. A little bit about Fulbright by the number. The Fulbright program funds over 8,000 awards annually, and about 800 of those go to U.S. scholars, professionals, and administrators. We also have a very robust visiting scholar program, U.S. and foreign student program, and a language teaching assistant program. To date, we have about 390,000 Fulbrighters who have participated in the program. If you look at the awards that were given out during the 2018-19 award cycle, you can see that about 38% of them went for academics and professionals who participated in teaching and research activities. We have another group who went and did teaching only while they were abroad or research only. About 9% went on administrator seminars for higher education administrators, and then we have about 8% who did postdoctoral research abroad. This ratio changes year by year, and these numbers are not set, but really are driven by the preference of the applicants when they're applying for awards. The eligibility for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. First and foremost, you need to be a U.S. citizen. So if you happen to be on this call and are a citizen of another nation, you might consider looking at our Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program that allows citizens from other nations to come and conduct research in the United States. If you are a recent graduate and you're interested in the English Teaching Assistant Program, which is another wonderful TEFL opportunity, you would visit the Fulbright Student Program, who works with recent graduates. For this particular program and the awards that we're talking about today, it is generally applicable to people who have a master's or PhD and teaching experience in higher education, so at a community college or at a four-year institution, or professionals who are doing work in the fields of education and TEFL. It's important when you're looking at Fulbright that you find an award that works for you. We have awards through Fulbright that start at the postdoctoral level, include early and mid-career scholars, distinguished chairs, and even emeriti, adjunct, and independent scholars. So we have a wide variety of awards that are available. About 63 countries in our awards catalog allow you to use the flex option, which allows you to have multiple visits over a two-year period that are shorter. And we also have a few global and regional awards that I will talk about today. When you are selecting the right award, it's important to match your expertise and experience to the award description. And as you see today, I highlighted some of the awards that are specifically relevant for TEFL and education. There are also certain discipline preferences, and again, I'll show you how to navigate to those. And above and beyond anything, you want to try to make sure that the project you're proposing is relevant to the host country that you are applying to. And of course, that your career level matches. Okay, now I would like to move on to our alumni, Carolyn Ho, again, who is a professor at the Lone Star College System. She is talking to us today from Houston, Texas, and was a TEFL Fulbright alumni to Taiwan. So, Caroline, why don't you take a few minutes and explain to the audience a little bit about your project, what you did, what brought you to Fulbright, and how the experience has impacted your career.
Thank you, Carlene, and thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here today to share a little bit of my experience as a Fulbright applicant and grantee, and hopefully I can answer some of your questions today. So as you can see, my Fulbright grant was TEFL and Taiwan. I had been searching for opportunities to go abroad to kind of expand my horizon a little bit. I've been looking at Fulbright and, of course, talking to Fulbright staff at TESOL conferences, NAFSA conferences. So one year, I happened to have a colleague on my campus who actually came back from Russia on the Fulbright Community College grant. So I talked to her, but I feel like I wanted something more TEFL oriented. And of course, I looked online and there was particularly one in East Asia, and Taiwan was one of it. I applied, but of course, the trick was at that time that the grant was for TEFL grant. My main job duty at that time was really teaching ESOL, or English as a Second Language, for language learners. So the teacher training part came a little bit as a secondary duty for me. And so fortunately, my college at the time had offered CELTA certificate program. And some of you may know, CELTA is a qualification program for teaching English as a foreign language, and its certificate is recognized all around the world. So I was fortunate enough to use that experience to write a proposal to be the TEFL trainer for Taiwan. So at that time, my grant period was 11 months. from August to July. And I did not need an invitation letter because it was not required, and in fact it was not needed and not encouraged. So at that time, my grant activities mainly include conducting training workshops to Fulbright ETAs, We had about 30-some ETAs at that time in Taiwan, and also for local English teachers who were co-teaching with ETAs. So there was a lot of that collaboration among the teachers, ETAs and teachers, and also I conducted workshop by myself and also with local TEFL professors. So again, the collaboration part was very strong there. I also had to observe teaching and offer feedback. There was a lot of traveling because there are three different sites in Taiwan. So every week I had to travel to a particular site outside of Taipei, the capital city, to work on that. In addition to all those trainings, I also had to read ETA's journals, give feedback on teaching, on co-teaching, and also on cultural adaptation. So I was quite busy, but it was absolutely transforming, life-transforming, because it opened my eyes to different ways and looking at teaching from the eyes of ETAs. So it's something brand new to them and brand new for me as well. So overall, I would say the application part was quite important, and actually it took some time for me to write. But I had to say most of the time I just had to highlight what I had, and then match what the host country is asking for. So that was an interesting application process. It took a lot of time, but I really enjoy it, and I'm glad that I did. So that was my little experience with Fulbright. Back to you,
Caroline.
Thank
you so much. Yeah, thank you, Caroline, for explaining. And I want you all to know that we will have about 30 minutes of questions and answers at the end. So if you have questions for me or you would like to hear a little bit more about Carolyn's experience, then feel free to add them to the chat box and we will get to them as soon as I overview some of the awards that are relevant to you all today. Okay, so what I'm going to do is take you on a little trip around the world to all of our different world regions and highlight some awards that are specifically appropriate for TEFL and education scholars. So let's start in the East Asia and the Pacific region. First, I'd like to highlight the Fulbright Scholar Award at the University of Canberra in Australia. This award is for an associate or full professor, with education being one of their preferred fields. Next, moving on to China, we have award Social Science, Humanities, and the Arts. This is a teaching award. However, China does also have a research version of this award. A PhD is not required, but you do need 3 years of higher education teaching experience. Both education and TEFL are welcome. Just to give you an example, when I say PhD is not required, the general profile that we're looking for are people who possibly have a master's degree and have been teaching as an adjunct faculty member or community college faculty member. Those people are also eligible to apply. And in the teaching only awards are especially strong because that makes up a large portion of your professional portfolio in your career. Moving on to Japan. Japan has an interesting award called Study of the United States. It is a teaching-only award, and you need 3 years of higher education teaching experience and a PhD. Education is one of the fields that is acceptable for this particular award. The one thing that I will note is that when you look at the award description, it will tell whether an invitation letter is needed or not. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time right now talking about it, but for this particular award, a letter of invitation is not necessary. In the Philippines has an award that's called All Disciplines. This means that anyone from any discipline can apply. A PhD is not required, and 3 years of teaching experience is recommended for this particular award. When it says teaching or teaching research, you can actually apply to do either of those activities, but you would want to make sure that your professional portfolio, namely your CV, can support your ability to either teach, research, or do both activities to make sure that you can present the strongest application possible. In Taiwan, they have an Arts, Education, Humanities, Professional Fields, and Social Science Award. It's a teaching research combination. A PhD is not required, but they do expect you to have some publications and 3 or more years of teaching experience. In Vietnam, a PhD is also not required for this All Disciplines Award, but you must have 5 years of teaching experience. Moving on to Europe and Eurasia, I did want to note that there are far more awards in the catalog that you would be eligible to apply for than I'm highlighting here, but I actually do want to just highlight some that stood out as good matches for the group that I'm talking to today, so all of you in TEFL and education. Okay, so moving on to Europe, we have a wonderful All Disciplines Award to Belarus that can be either teaching or teaching and research, and a PhD is not required. The Czech Republic, this is a really interesting award, the Fulbright Masaryk Award in NGO Management. This is for people who might be teaching in the realm of NGO management because you would be teaching courses and also working with an NGO. So if you have experience teaching and working with NGOs, especially ones related to education, this might be an interesting award to consider. Finland has a really exciting award that's called the Roving Scholar in American Studies Teaching Award, where you literally rove around Finland teaching in American studies. So if you teach education, maybe American literature, American culture, or you do American culture as one of the components of your TEFL training, then this is an interesting award to consider, especially if you'd like to see a wide variety of places in Finland. In Georgia, there is another All Disciplines Award, and this one allows for research, teaching, or a professional project. A professional project is especially applicable for people who want to go and learn some aspect of the culture, and they want to maybe run some workshops or maybe help develop, do a curriculum design project with someone. It might be appropriate for someone who's not publishing as much but has a lot of practical experience. You could go and run some workshops over there. A PhD is not required for this award to Georgia, but 2 years of teaching experience is required. Okay, for any community college faculty that we have on the line, and I hope we have some here, there is an award to Russia that is only for community college faculty. It's a teaching award, and a PhD is not required, and they are requesting someone in both TEFL and education. Turkey also has a TEFL award that is appropriate for teaching. For this award, a PhD is required, and 2 years of teaching is preferred. Okay, moving on to Middle East and North Africa. This particular region has a large demand for TEFL and education training. And so I'd like you to really look closely at some of these awards. In Algeria, there is a teaching award in either TEFL or applied linguistics. And some people are seeking applicants in education and composition. So maybe if you're not a TEFL person, but you do work in working with multilingual speakers or writing across the curriculum or something like that, then the award to Algeria would be a good match for you. In Bahrain, there is a specific award that's for educational administration and teacher education. Both TEFL and education are options. A PhD is required, but if you are in studying higher education administration or just educational administration as a whole as part of your education curriculum and your research, then the award to Bahrain is a very interesting one to consider. Jordan really wants TEFL practitioners and applied linguists, so people who do language acquisition, sociolinguistics as well. You could also, in theory, apply to the All Disciplines Award to Jordan because they also list education and TEFL as some of their preferred disciplines. So you would have a couple different options depending on where you wanted to be and what you wanted to do. In Kuwait, a PhD is not required, but they do ask that you have 5 years of teaching experience or for professionals that you have education in the field. So if you're a professional trainer in some aspect of education, then the award to Kuwait might be particularly appealing. Moving on to Oman. Oman has an award that's called All Disciplines. And just to note, if there is an award that says All Disciplines, You are going to be eligible for that award because it is open to all disciplines, but sometimes as you read a little bit further, it shows that even though they're open to all disciplines, they have a preference for certain awards. So in this particular award to Oman, they did list education and TEFL as preferences that they have. This award is also very flexible because it allows you to choose whether you would like to do research, teaching, or a teaching research combination. The final award in this region that I'd like to highlight is the one to the Palestinian Territories or West Bank. This is a TEFL or English language award that is open to teaching or teaching research. The focus of this award is on teacher training, so they really would like assistance with curriculum development, maybe some training workshops as well. So even if you are primarily at a community college teaching ESL, but you have maybe worked with colleagues or given some workshops at some local groups or regional organizations like your local TESOL organizations or whatnot, then you would be a strong candidate for this award. Okay, moving on to South and Central Asia. Bhutan has a multiple disciplines award, of which education is listed. A PhD is not required, but 3 years of experience is required. Just to give you an overview of the South and Central Asia region as a whole, this region really wants a lot of assistance with curriculum development, capacity building, training of their teachers. So if this is something that you'd like to do, this region is actually a very good fit for you. Central Asia has an award that is the TEFL award that allows for professional projects or teaching. And the countries you can see are Kazakhstan, Kyrgyz Republic, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. Now for this award, it's called a multi-country award, but in fact you only go to one country. And so if you would like to have some type of an impact in Central Asia, but you're not very particular about exactly where you'd like to go, this is a great award to apply to because they will place you in the country that has the most need. A PhD is not required, and it's open to professionals, academics, and postdocs. So you would basically rank these countries in order of where you would like to go, and they will place you where they need someone the most. India is also offers a fabulous award, the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award in all disciplines. This can have a teaching or a research focus as a professional project. You can also just teach research or teaching research combination. It is probably one of the most open awards in the entire catalog where you can propose exactly what it is you would like to do, and a PhD is not required. Sri Lanka is the final award I'll introduce in this particular region. A PhD is not required, but you do need some professional experience, so it's not appropriate necessarily for a postdoc. Also, one thing that I forgot to mention is that when I say that there are 3 years of experience is required, we do not count TA time as experience. So the 3 years of experience must be incurred after you complete your final degree. So if your master's at a community college, 3 years at the community college teaching level as a faculty member or an adjunct faculty. But TA time does not count. Okay, moving on to Sub-Saharan Africa. In Sub-Saharan Africa, almost all of the awards are called all disciplines, and in particular, the ones that I'm introducing today are. We have all disciplines awards to Guinea, Malawi, Rwanda, Sierra Leone, Tanzania, Uganda. And all of these are open to TEFL education or applied linguistics. Sierra Leone, in particular, I would like to point out, is one that is specifically asking for people in the field of teacher education. So if you are a trainer, that's a particularly good award for you. And in Tanzania, they are specifically looking for assistance with developing programs in virtual education and educational technology. So if you do work in that field, the award to Tanzania would be a good fit for you. With Uganda, the unique aspect of that award is that they are looking for people who have experience also in special education. So if you are a special education practitioner, Uganda would be a good fit for you. The final award that I will mention in this region is the African Regional Research Program Award. This allows you to conduct research in one or more countries for shorter periods of time. Not all awards, but many awards to Africa are 10-month awards, and I know some faculty members are not able to take the entire year off to go and conduct research or do teaching abroad. So if you have only a semester of time that you're able to get away, then the Africa Regional Research Program might be a good match for you. And then the final world region is the Western Hemisphere. We have a chair award to Brazil, the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Public Policy. And I listed this here because education is one of the focuses or one of the preferences for this award, but it would be for people who are looking at education from a public policy perspective. So if that is your approach to your educational research, the award to Brazil would be a very good fit for you. Canada is also looking for more advanced scholars to apply for the Research Chairs in Education Award. So there are a few universities in Canada who are requesting scholars, and you can look at all of the specific requirements in the award description. But basically, they would like people who are early childhood education practitioners, people who do work in STEM education, curriculum design, and multicultural education. So if those are your specialties and you're associate or full professor or above, the award to Canada is a good match for you. Costa Rica is an exciting award, especially if you do have some Spanish skills, because many of the awards to South and Central America have some Spanish language skills that are recommended. But for Costa Rica, TEFL is actually a priority for the embassy, especially those who emphasize ESP in their work or work on professional development. A PhD is not required for that award. In Guatemala, TEFL and education are both priority award or priority disciplines, and a PhD is not required. For Mexico, a PhD is required as well as some Spanish-speaking skills, but they really are looking for practitioners who work with writing across the curriculum and all aspects of TEFL. For Panama, a PhD is required, and this is especially suitable for people who teach scientific writing. That's what their request is. Suriname, a PhD is also not required, and 3 years of education is, but they are looking for education practitioners, especially people who do music education. So if you do more creative education in your teaching, then that would be a good match for you. And Trinidad and Tobago is the final award that I'll talk about today. A PhD is not required, but they really would like to find someone who does research in the area of special education. So if that is your specific field of interest, then that would be a good match for you. When you are looking at these awards and you go to the awards catalog, I have the website listed here, awards.cies.org. You will see the award description has four distinct tabs, and I'd like to make sure to point out that you should review the information in every single tab. The award details talk about the length of time, that you can be there, and what degree requirement is there, what preferences they have. All of the basic facts about the award. The requirements talk about what type of experience you need to be eligible for the awards. These eligibility, the award requirements differ award by award because each country is allowed to pick specific requirements that they want to set for the award. The stipend and benefits tab, this is really important because it lists how much you will receive as the stipend for the particular award. You get, excuse me one second, I have to. Okay, sorry about that. So the stipend and benefits award, that is where you will find out about your travel allowance. It'll talk about how much you would receive per month on this award, and it would also talk about any type of family assistance if they provide dependent benefits. And then finally, the country area overview gives you some more facts and information about the award. Your application components. The basic application component is an application form and then a 3 to 5 page project statement. You will also need to submit a CV or a resume and 2 letters of recommendation. The language proficiency report and the letter of invitation are also required if it states so on the award description. If it is optional or recommended, then you do not need to have it. Other than that, if you are applying for a teaching award, you would provide syllabi, and if you're applying for a research project, you would provide a bibliography, and then artists are, if you're a creative writer, you would provide a portfolio submission or any other type of artist. In the project statement, I'm not going to go through so many details, but just to give you a brief overview of what that is, you would basically describe what it is you would like to do on your Fulbright Award. You would focus on the plan that you have to achieve it, possibly methods if you're doing a research project, and explain the anticipated impact of your award, both on your hosts, your home institution, and then you and your career. This is the heart of your application, and this is where you are able to explain yourself in detail to the committee. New this year are some supplemental questions. For example, why Fulbright, or why do you need to be in the country that you're applying for? And that's really important. Why do you need to be in China? Why do you need to be in Mexico to do what it is that you want to do? You also have the opportunity to discuss how adaptable you are in dealing with challenging situations and how you would adapt your materials to the host culture. So these are supplemental questions altogether. This makes up your application. Okay, I know I went somewhat quickly through the facts and information, and I'd like to take some time for questions right now because I do think that one of the benefits of meeting in person like this is having the opportunity to ask questions. So if you are able to put them in the chat box, I'm going to start working through. If you would like Carolyn to answer them from her perspective as a Fulbright scholar, then you can also include your question, make a note that it's for Carolyn, and I will read it out for her. But I'd like to take this last time to answer questions. Okay, so let me go through to the question and answer section. Okay, so this is for you, Caroline.
Okay.
Can you please share any tips for helping two-year college faculty craft a competitive application, particularly for those who do not have any TEFL certification?
And assuming, so this is for a TEFL grant, I would imagine.
Yeah, it could be TEFL or maybe someone who's actually just a practitioner in the classroom working with multilingual speakers.
Right. So that would be similar to my situation at that time, except I had that sales trainer experience. But I would say, even if for a TEFL grant, that it doesn't seem like you have a lot of the training, teacher training experience, you should take advantage of the presentations or workshops that you have done, that you have conducted, because those are the opportunity that you're sharing best practices with your peers. And I would count that definitely as the teacher training. Another thing that you might want to do is, of course, Carlene mentioned it earlier, that if you have a particular work experience or your professional development activities with local TESOL organizations or national TESOL organizations, definitely highlight that, because that shows that you are you're multidimensional. You're not just teaching language learners. You actually are involved to educate your peers or exchanging with your peers. You're also elevating your experience to the level of looking at the curriculum, looking at larger, a different dimension of the TEFL field. So I would say leverage those experiences, even if it's not on your work resume that you are a teacher trainer, but I'm sure you have those other experiences that you can highlight and kind of work that into your proposal. So that would be my little tip to you.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I have another question right here that says, how is early career defined? That's actually a good question. Early career, we usually say 5 or less years of experience. So if you have 5 or less years of experience, you are early career. However, the award description might define it differently. If a PhD is required, some awards will define it as anything like assistant or below. So that would be assistant professor, possibly contingent faculty like a lecturer. That would be, except that, excuse me, I take that back, because a lecturer who has experience would not be considered early career. They would have more career. So it's usually the first 5 years of your career, but you would check the award description for those details. Okay, let me move on to the next question here. If there are faculty in the host country that have already made contact with me, can I work with them? Absolutely. You can propose to work with them, because if an invitation letter is required, you could have them write an invitation letter on your behalf. It actually does help if you have faculty member contacts in the country, but that is not necessary at the beginning of the application process. We have on our website the Fulbright Scholar Directory that allows you to search for alumni by country, or possibly even look through the project titles and find a keyword that might match what it is you're proposing. And sometimes those people can help introduce you to people if you need assistance finding a contact in the country. But if you do have a contact already, you are absolutely able to have them write a letter of invitation and propose work that you could do together. Okay. Would an all disciplines award be harder to get than a TEFL AL award, since more people from various fields would be applying? That is actually a great question to have. It really depends on what some of the preferences are in the all disciplines award. If the all disciplines award is saying that they really want people in TEFL applied linguistics, then you would be a strong candidate for that particular award, because you are able to offer what it is they are requesting. If you apply for a TEFL Applied Linguistics only award, then what you have done is eliminated about 95% of the potential applicants, because they would not be eligible for that award. You would only be competing against your peers. So it's not that one would be easier than the other. It really does depend on what they're requesting and what you have to offer for them. So please do feel free to reach out if you'd like a little bit more information on that differentiation, or if you're trying to decide between country A or award A or award B in the same country. Okay, do you know which colleges or universities are responsive in Sierra Leone? It has been very difficult reaching anyone. Okay, this is one of the benefits of working through the Fulbright program. If you are having difficulty reaching someone in a specific country, whether it be Sierra Leone or any other country, then you can actually reach out to the program staff member whose name is listed on the award description. We have 5 staff members who work with applicants to different world regions, and you can reach out to us and we can try to see what we can do on your behalf to get some type of response for you. And so especially if you are reaching out in Sierra Leone, maybe you want to do some teacher education work, which is what they're specifically asking about, then please reach out to us and we can help you with that process. So just email and we will be able to provide some assistance. Okay, here's another question. I have a PhD in culture, language, and literacy. I teach high school AP courses, government economics history. I also teach as an adjunct. Uh-oh, I just lost my question. As an adjunct. Technical difficulty. So for the person who is asking about eligibility, who teaches AP courses but also has a PhD, please do consider reaching out to us as an adjunct faculty member. If you have been an adjunct for 2 or more years, there are almost always awards that you would be eligible for, and your experience could speak for that. For people who are currently teaching at the high school level, I also know that the Roving Scholar Award to Finland that I mentioned is often a good fit because it's the Roving Scholar in American Studies, and so you can very broadly define what that is. But for you, Michelle, or anyone else on the call who has questions about eligibility, the best thing to do is to email the contact information in the specific award description you're considering and include your CV, and we can help you determine eligibility. What are some of the key factors in a successful application? Okay, this is a great question, and that's why we do run these webinars, to try to help you make that match. The most successful applicants are the ones whose experience match what it is the award description is looking for, so having that good match in place. Caroline, would you like to add anything else that about what you have heard about just from talking to different people about what you think are some of the key factors in a successful application?
I think I've known people who have applied, and I would say, in addition to what you just mentioned about just basically meeting that profile that they're looking for, I think a strong proposal statement, particularly making sure that you have the credential and the experience to carry on this project or carry out this project, that's what they're looking for, that the project is feasible from the standpoint of your background and experience. Another thing that I would say is also I've heard that some applicants actually highlight the part about what they call the impact statement. So what would the project, how would the project impact you as a scholar, the host country, and also the United States. So in the proposal, if the part about collaboration, kind of highlight how this project could become a two-way street and how the two countries can benefit from that understanding and learning, that would kind of make your proposal stand out.
Thank you, Caroline. That's extremely helpful. And as such, just as you heard all of these interesting bits of advice from Caroline as well, I would encourage you to have some of your colleagues read your proposal, because the way that the process works is your proposal has to be reviewed domestically by a peer review committee from your discipline, and that then once the project goes over to the country you're applying for, if it makes it through the peer review committee, it is reviewed by a much broader group of people who will be reviewing the application. So making sure it's accessible to people both inside and outside your discipline. We have one question about the application deadline. And for this particular application deadline for the Fulbright Scholar Program, it is September 15th, 2020. For awards during the 2021-2022 academic year. So you apply almost one full year or a year and a half before you plan on going. We do have one competition per year. It always opens in February and closes in mid-September. I have a question from a previous Fulbrighter who says, to what extent is your experience as a previous Fulbrighter positive or negative? It actually is just one piece of a very detailed application that you submit. If you are a former Fulbright scholar, you would just have to justify your need for another grant, so possibly that you are extending your research to a new country, that you are taking your research in that same country in a new direction. So you would need to just talk about why you have a need to be back in that country. But you can definitely put that on your application. Where all things are the same, the preference is given to the person who has not had a scholar grant before, but that's when all other things are considered the same. I am applying for TEFL teacher training. I'm not sure how to answer what my impact will be. That would be something that you would think about impact again in both ways, both what you would give to the country that you're visiting, and a lot of that would be the capacity building nature of what you're doing as a teacher trainer, but also how your international experience might inform or open your mind when you continue the teacher training back in the United States. Like, how will you be changed as a result of the work that you have done in that other country? You're welcome to reach out to us for some more ideas, but it's that whole idea of really looking at what would change, how would you be transformed as a result of your experience, and how would that inform your scholarship or your academic work once you returned to the United States. Okay. So someone says, it sounds like the Fulbright scholars are busy during their grant periods. How does this work with childcare? Okay, so there are many, many Fulbrighters who take families. I, 2 years ago, was a Fulbrighter myself, and I took my 4 children with me to Japan. And so I am of the mind that anyone can make it work if I can make it work. And so you would just try to go through the alumni directory, maybe get some advice of people who did take children with them. I had children at international school, and then I also had one who was at a local Japanese daycare. And it worked out because my host institution was able to connect me to some resources that made it possible. And so I'd be happy to talk to anyone about juggling children on a Fulbright Award if that's something that you'd like to email me about. Is there a possibility of teaching in Mexico or Finland? So the Mexico TEFL Award I did present, that one is over there. Finland, we have the Roving Scholar Award. There are other awards, but you would want to just look at the award description because they do change. Do you have to be employed as a teacher now to be eligible? Is there an age limit? There is not an age limit. And you do not necessarily need to be employed at this time if you have the experience to back up what it is you're trying to do. The challenge, if you are not planning on going back to another job, is to find a way to justify that impact. Because when you get back from your award, they want to see that your experience will have an impact. And Caroline, would you like to talk for a minute as well about just how you really saw your impact taking part in your day-to-day experience at Lone Star?
I think for me, mostly it is because when I was training teachers and in the United States, most of the time they already had some experience. But now when I was in Taiwan, I was training ETAs who were just came out of college. I had zero teaching experience. So that helped me a lot when I after I came back. I actually had to kind of just rethink about how to kind of prep myself into training teachers who are coming in with completely, you know, no prior experience or knowledge of how language acquisition works. And also because of that preparation and that extra layers of kind of the thinking, it also helped me come back to teach lower level students a lot better as well. It's more effective now because I get to kind of get that little, anticipation of difficulty a lot better. So for me professionally and personally, that has been the biggest impact for me.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It is really good to look at that different perspective that you have now coming back. I have one question here about an independent scholar, like what makes an independent scholar. If you search through the scholar directory, you can actually find people where it says institutional affiliation, independent scholar listed there. If you send me an email off the top of my head, I can't come up with any since I don't have the catalog in front of me, but I would be happy to share examples. I see independent scholars a lot in in the arts awards, so a lot of artists are independent artists. We have independent scholars who maybe don't have a university affiliation but are still writing and publishing in the field, possibly people who have training businesses or consulting businesses where they are doing consulting in the discipline that is being asked about. I see those as independent scholars as well. I hope that gives you at least a few ideas. but I'd be happy to talk more about independent scholars and give you some concrete examples if you reach out to me by email. Okay, so someone asked, does the bibliography for research include both grants and articles that refer to research completed, or can it include research done at an institution that was part of a report but not published? That's a great question. If you are proposing to do research as any component of your award, you do need to submit a bibliography. The bibliography is actually not a bibliography of your work, though of course your work can be included in the bibliography. That bibliography is more an overview of where your research would fit within the larger field of academic research. And so you would look at, like, if you're doing research in the area of English for specific purposes, then you would have all of the other articles related to your aspect of English for specific purposes included in that bibliography. I think more than anything, the review committee wants to see how your work would fit into overall scholarship in your field. And that's why the discipline committees that review your application here domestically are so important for maintaining the standards of the Fulbright program. So that's what you should think about the bibliography as more work that you would see your research fitting into. Okay, so someone asked about the competition level at different countries. It changes year by year, so this is just not information that we give out. I know some countries might receive more applicants or some awards might. For example, the Global Scholar Award that we have is probably the most popular award in the catalog. I can let you know that just because year after year that tends to be the case. But really, you are the most competitive in a country where your skills match what it is they're asking about. So I would just use that as the guiding factor on which country to apply to. What kind of proposal should be prepared for teaching? Does the syllabi of the host country need to be mapped out? That's also a really great question. So the proposal, if you're proposing a teaching project, it should be overviewing the classes, the types of classes, the strategy that you're teaching, how you would plan on teaching them. And when you submit the syllabi can be syllabi from courses that you've taught in the United States that might be similar or adapted to the host country's needs. They don't need to be created from scratch, but they should be really good examples of what it is that you would do in the classroom so they can see how you would act as a teacher in the classroom. Caroline, since you were on a teaching-only award, do you have any other comments to add about what would make a good syllabus to include in your application?
I would say on the syllabus, if possible, but first of all, I would say the books that you're listing, make sure that they're updated, because sometimes some people would use the book for a long time and still put that in a proposal, and I've heard some people submitted that but didn't get, you know, accepted, and I was wondering if that would be the case. So update your information, update the books, and also try to kind of convey through your syllabus, like Carlene said earlier, how you would approach teaching that particular subject. So if you were going to teach speaking or oral communication, how would you go about doing that, and can your syllabus show us that? So that's something that I would like to offer, is make sure that your syllabus kind of represents how you would act in a classroom.
All right. Thank you, Caroline. That's helpful advice. Someone asked about an age limit for a Fulbright. We do not discriminate on age, so please feel free to apply regardless of what age you are. The only reason that age is a factor is, again, when we talk about impact. So if you are retired but still active in the field, then absolutely highlight how you're still active in the field and how the impact will continue when you return to your home country. Impact is definitely an important factor, but we do not discriminate against people regardless of age. Okay, so someone said, regarding experience, experience counts from when you receive your highest degree, but only one is a doctor, nine is master's. Some of the countries, so when we talk about experience, if you had a master's and did a number of years of teaching experience, and then you got your PhD and had 1 year of teaching experience, then it depends on the country. You would want to reach out to us specifically. Most people say it has to be after your teaching experience or after your highest degree, but other countries are a little bit more flexible. Or the countries that don't require a PhD, they would accept your experience after your master's degree as well. Okay. Let me go through and get, I'm realizing that we have 3 minutes left and I want to make sure to try to diversify the questions and just let you know if you do not receive a response, please feel free to reach out to me via email. I'll include my information on the next page. How many reviewers are there that make a decision on the application? In the peer review, we have 3 reviewers from your discipline who are also alumni who will be reviewing the application. Okay. If we apply and get refused, does that reduce your chance if you reapply again? No, absolutely not. Your application gets evaluated independently every year. And in fact, the review committees tend to change year by year. We put new members in, take old members out, and whatnot. Do you need to apply for each award separately? In fact, you are only allowed to apply for one award per competition cycle. So you want to very carefully consider where you would be the best match and apply for that award right there. Some people are asking about contact information, for example, in Costa Rica and other contact information. Again, because the award descriptions are written by so many different countries, some countries provide contact information and other countries do not provide contact information. And so if you are confused about whether to or how to make contact with people overseas, especially if you're trying to secure a letter of invitation, then please reach out to the program staff. That is what we're here to do, is just to help support you through that process. Okay. It says, with all things being equal, would an applicant without dependents be more likely to get an award than one with a family? It does not matter whether you have dependents or do not have dependents. Your application is reviewed for its academic merit in and of itself, regardless of dependents. Okay, if you had prior experience in the country, does that help or harm your chance? This is unfortunately the last question I can answer, but that one, it really depends. There are some awards that say preference is given to people who do not have substantial experience in this country, and other awards don't indicate that at all. And in fact, many heritage applicants, people who came from that country originally, immigrated, receive awards to that country. So it really does vary. I want to thank you guys so much for joining us today. If you have any questions, again, the best way to reach out is to look at the award description for the country that you are interested in, and I will give you the contact information right here, and email the person whose name is listed on that award description. We try to respond to every email within 24 to 48 hours. And if you have a general question that you'd like to ask, feel free to email us at scholars@iie.org. But we look forward to working with you. We hope everyone stays safe and healthy during this unprecedented time. But we really are hoping to recruit the next group of very talented, qualified scholars to join the Fulbright program for 21-22. I want to give a special shout out of thanks to Carolyn for joining us today. And I would like to just wish you all the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.